Good afternoon, gardeners. You're with Garden Planet with Selena and Terry.
Hi, Selena. How's it going in the garden?
Pretty good. Now's the time to get the bulbs in for spring. But before we go into that, I hear there's some dangerous plants out there, Terry.
Which ones are those?
Well,
she comes on like a rose, but everybody knows she'll get you in touch. You can look, but you better not touch. Poison ivy, poison ivy. Lady,
don't cry, you're sleeping. Poison ivy comes a creeping around.
Creeping plants, Harry. They can be good or bad, but they can make really good ground covers.
Wonderful ground covers, as long as they don't get out of control. And you know, that's the whole issue with creeping, really, isn't it? Is which ones do it in a tidy fashion and which ones go out of control. I'm kind of not, I do have bits of ivy, and I do see ivy as being a bit unmanageable. And also ficus, you know?
Yes.
It looks great on walls and things like that, but it's kind of high maintenance if you're going to keep it clipped and there's just no stopping it because it'll keep going. And I must say, I have a neighbour situation where the ficus has been left to run rampant and it gets up to where it gets very strong leaves and things, and then it gets really, really hard to set back a bit.
On a wall, good. On the ground, not so good.
And around your plants and throttling everything in sight, not good at all.
Oh, it's just like Kaikuyu.
Yeah.
So let's have a look at some good, well-behaved ground covers.
Which are your favourites then?
Well, it depends on where you want to plant them. So I have this space by the side of my house that was just by the driveway, and it was covered with stones and some dirt underneath, not very much soil, just like a couple of inches. And what I found, I tried different ground covers to see what would work, and so I found a few, some didn't and some did. And the ones that were really good there, it's on the south side of the house, so a little bit shady, but gets the afternoon sun. So one that was really good was chamomile.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the lawn chamomiles.
I thought that would need lots of sun, so not so much, huh?
It's in the sun, but the afternoon sun, so it likes that. So I had, and it's a lovely smell, and you can cut the flowers and dry them, and it looks like a lawn, actually.
No, it's pretty, and, you know, the tea is just the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very good, and, you know, lovely sleep aid.
Yeah, so that was a good one. Another one, the lamb's ears.
Yeah, they're cute. And they're apparently a medicine plant as well. Not necessarily something that we'd all leap into the garden and have some medicine, but they're like an antibiotic plant. And I noticed that the animals will nibble on it for their own, you know, medicinal purposes.
Terry, are you thinking the same plant I'm thinking, though?
It's got a fairy grey leaf.
Yep.
Yeah, I was really surprised to see the animals eating it, and I don't know what its other name is, but I did look it up.
Stachys byzantia?
No.
Is that the one?
I don't think that's the one.
Oh, okay. I must be thinking two different plants.
Two furry little lamb's tongues.
It's a grey with a fluffy leaf.
Yeah,
and it's,
very definitely.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's a while since I looked it up, but when I saw the animals nibbling on it, I thought, what's going on here? And found out that it had antibiotic properties.
Well, I didn't know that, Terry. I learned something.
No, it's worth looking up to see if we are talking about the same thing.
Well,
but yes, the description's exactly the same.
The good thing is that it's very easy to grow, but it kind of likes the dry. If you plant it in a wet area, the leaves will go all mushy. So you kind of have to have it in a sort of dryish spot.
It's a bit like sclerantis if it gets sort of holes in the middle of it,
Yeah.
Where it either has a wet patch or there's a weed grows up through it and throws shade over it, and then you pull it out, and so then your lovely sclerantis cushion has a, looks like it needs darning.
Okay, talking about sclerantis, maybe some listeners don't know what it is. Can you describe it, Terry?
There's a native one, and it's a very light green, and it forms sort of quite substantial cushions.
Yeah, it is like a green cushion.
Sclerantis biflorus. It says in stony soil, gravel, or containers of free-draining succulent mix. So moss look-alike is like a pet. Yes. It's impossible not to reach down and give it a pat. That's exactly what you want to do.
Yeah, I also have that in my sort of ground covery garden.
Yeah.
And it's doing quite well. It doesn't creep along. It expands, but it doesn't take over.
So. And it's not that fast either.
No.
If you wanted to cover an area, you'd have to put in a few plants, I think, depending on how much coverage you wanted from it. But it's very appealing, very touchable. In Japanese gardens, they use it quite elaborately to make quite big round humps to sort of make shapes just with the ground cover.
It's such a neat plant.
It is a good plant.
What about the ones that kind of you want a bit more coverage? Because I've got one called Leptonella.
What kind of conditions is Leptonella?
It seems to like not too dry, but just even moisture, and it'll grow more fluffy if it's in a bit of moist shaded area, and it can get dried out by the sun. So
dapple light.
Yeah, but it does spread quite fast. But it's got a beautiful miniature ferny looking leaf.
I've had mixed results with it, but probably by putting it in the wrong place and expecting it to do well on a bit of a clay bank. It needs something sort of sandy and loose beneath it, I think.
Yeah, because it likes to creep along. It's like a little rhizome, but it's not like kaki.
It doesn't want to penetrate anything, so it's a very, I think, a light, sandy kind of setting, maybe.
Yeah.
Although, as you say, with enough moisture, so it's hard to pick the right spot. Well, where did you use it?
Oh, just also in the same area. I've got like little areas of ground covers.
Okay. Like your little laboratory for ground covers.
Yeah, it's an experiment. It's like a tapestry, you know.
Nice.
It's all starting to knit together. When it was first planted, it had gaps, but then it sort of melded together.
Well, it is like a tapestry then, isn't it? Sort of like quilting with ground covers.
Yeah, another one I found that did really well is Ajuga.
Yeah, that's a very attractive plant, isn't it?
Yes, it's a purpley, got beautiful purpley kind of leaves and bluey purpley flowers.
Mm. And the bees really like it too.
And it does quite well in the moister spots, in the shade.
Mm.
And it's not too invasive. You can just pull it out if you don't want it.
Mm.
I'd recommend that. And yes, bees love it.
I've got one here called, it's otherwise named as Bugleweed, Ajuga reptans, Shady Woodlands. For the best full effect, according to this, So what about Solaria, which is my current favourite? Well, one of my two current favourites. I'm really keen on that one. Because it seems not to be bothered by anything, I've got it where it's on quite wet clay in the winter, sort of along with reedy type grasses and stuff like that, so it's forming the ground cover there, climbing out of that bed and quite happily making its way through hot stony, you know, like where you've poured stone as you would, you know, as a ground cover for a walk-on kind of.
Yeah.
The little round river stones.
Yeah.
The small ones. And off it goes, wandering amongst that quite happily. So that's hot and dry. And right next to it, it's doing just as well on wet and clay.
What a versatile plant.
And it does send up tiny little white flowers, but they're kind of inconsequential. I like the fleshy, it kind of has a lobed... leaf, if you want to call it a leaf. You don't think of it as a leaf. It's got a lobed form and it looks quite fleshy and it's just hugely adaptable,
which is... Wow. And you had it going good in your garden. I just couldn't get it to grow in mine.
Oh, that's interesting. So you put it into the same space that you talked about before?
Yeah, and it didn't seem to spread as well as the others. I don't know if it's still there. Maybe it's hiding underneath some others. But
there is plenty of... It's reasonably sunny where it is, but I was just amazed to see it. I thought it would get to the edge of the sort of wet clay, which obviously it can deal with, and sort of come to a halt. And it went, oh, no, there's some nice hot stones here. I'll set out on that path. So I haven't discouraged it, actually, because it just kind of weaves interestingly between.
Another thing about Solaria, I learned that you can pour salt water on it to kill any other weeds around it, but it won't kill the Solaria.
So it's a seaside
original,
huh?
Yeah.
What is it? What's my little log here say about Solaria? I don't know if it's even in my list here. It must be, surely. It might have, you know, sometimes there's some good clues in here.
It's good for a no-mow lawn, they say.
Yeah, because it gets quite firm and dense. Like in the same little log, there's one here for baby tears, which are far more delicate than Solaria. Solaria seems to be pretty robust and it's not on this list.
Okay.
Which is interesting. But I, you know, it's on other, many other lists, but I've certainly found it very workable.
And
I fall in love with anything that gets enthusiastic in my difficult sight.
I haven't tried baby's tears, but I've also got Pratea.
Pratea's lovely.
Which is quite a similar plant, but it's, yeah, it likes the sort of damp. So I've got it in a damper area, but it's a very fast grower. It doesn't tend to like the sun too much because it can get a bit fried.
Well, I do have it on what is, you know, a mixed sunshade bank.
Yeah.
Going off, doing great things around cobblestones and over things that I want it just to cover.
Mm.
And it, this summer just gone, just absolutely fried it. I'm presuming, like, back to crispy. I'm kind of hanging out for the fact that, you know, as it rains, it will just somehow re-emerge. I'm hoping so.
Revival, please.
But then I've got it in another part, again, around stony path situation where it is sufficiently shady for it not to have got cooked, and it's doing just fine. So I just hope the cooked ones come back.
Yeah, I hope so.
And there's a white flower or a blue flower, and I've got the blue flower. It's very, very pretty.
Yes, I've got the blue flower too.
Yeah, I love the blue flowers. Yeah, I do too.
Forget Me Not is an annual that can sort of act as a ground cover.
Mm.
Also with blue flowers, sometimes that comes up in that area I've got.
I saw something recently called Brunnera, which looks very much like the forget-me-not, same sort of flower, but it seems to be on maybe a longer stalk, if you know what I mean, so it grows higher. And I kept looking at it thinking, are these not the same plant? Because there is a kind of wild, rambling forget-me-not, and maybe it isn't a forget-me-not at all. Maybe I thought it was, and it turns out that it's actually this Brunnera.
Oh, okay. I haven't come across that plant.
No.
But, yeah.
Cute, with those little flowers.
Yeah.
And, of course, my all-time passionate favourite is Mondo. I just think Mondo is magic. It's like no maintenance because it only grows to the height that it grows to, and then it stops, so you don't have to mow it. But if by chance you've got it mixed amongst other stuff that you mow, then it just regrows back to that, you know, point that it's however high. And it fills wonderfully around all sorts of beds or makes a bed. Like, I've got some beds that the cat thinks are just fantastic because she can dive into it and sort of disappear under it. How high would you say that is? It's about 10 centimetres or so.
15 centimetres. Yeah.
And so she can get under there and hide and rumble you as you come down the path or whatever, you know. But I've got bluestone, which is hot, that you can plant in the bunks and it does just so well.
Right.
And a good combination with some of the thymes, especially the darker green thymes. So, and Mondo, gosh, you see it used everywhere in Japan.
Yeah.
It's the most one. And, of course, it does have a little flower. People don't notice quite often, but it does have a tiny white flower. I can't think of a place that it doesn't function. Hot, cold, wet, dry, rocky, you know, everywhere.
It's a tough plant
and it's a completely adaptable one, and it's a good form because it's slightly weeping and it's at its mighty height of 10 centimetres.
Makes good edging.
Yeah, it's...
You can plant it in patterns and...
Yes, you can,
Very, what do you call it, orderly.
Yeah, it is orderly. It's a fantastic, you know, I just crazy for it, really.
Similar to Mondo grass, but with a flower, the lily turf.
Oh, I don't know that one. Lily turf.
Yes, it looks like Mondo grass, but it has a purple flower on a spiky thing. But you do need to be careful to cut those off when they die down. But otherwise, it looks very similar to Mondo grass, but bigger, though.
Bigger. There is a bigger format which has either purple or white flowers, but I didn't... What are you calling that one?
Lily turf.
Lily turf.
Or... I know there is a Latin name, it's just escaped me at the moment.
I'll Google while you tell us about lily turf.
And that is used in a lot of gardens as an edging and underplanting around trees, or, you know, just as an edging. When the purple flowers come out, you've got a ribbon of purple. And when the flowers die down, you cut them down, it just looks like Mondo grass. So.
Oh, okay. I'm wondering if it's the same one. I've got a few of that, you know, I was actually gifted. But it doesn't seem to spread like Mondo, this one. Do they?
They clump.
They clump. Maybe it is the one I'm thinking. This wouldn't answer me because I turned my phone off coming into the studio, as I rightfully should. But here it comes. Oh, Liriope.
Yes, Liriope.
Oh,
yeah.
No, that is what that's what I had in my head as a picture. Oh, okay, you call that lily turf, so you do. Okay, yeah, no, Liriope's lovely. But you do have to plant a lot of individual plants. It doesn't sort of leapfrog its way around the same way as Mondo does.
Yes, with Mondo, it'll reproduce itself and then you can take bits out and plant them, plunk them somewhere else. So you'll get an expanding carpet if you.
Whereas the Liriope, you could make it as a kind of feature bed because the flowers are much more prominent.
Mm.
But yes, good under shrubs and stuff.
And also you can just cut it back when sometimes the leaves might get a bit tatty, but if you cut it back, it's just like grass, it'll grow back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't experimented much with that, but I enjoy it. And I do like, it's called Liriope muscari, which is also, muscaria is that little bulb that comes up, right? With, I think they call it muscari because the flower on it looks like
it
the bulb.
It looks very similar.
Yeah.
It sort of looks like a bunch of grapes.
Yeah.
That's why they call it grape hyacinth.
Yeah.
But,
so the flower on the Liriope is very similar.
Yeah.
That's probably why they have that suffix on it. Cool. Okay, what else do I... I think, you know, in New Zealand we have to talk about the caprosmas, the ground covers.
The caprosmas.
They're very... and I like the... Oh, what is it? It often gets called mingy mingy, which is just an all-purpose word.
Molenbeekias.
Yes. I love Molenbeekias. But slow...
Yeah.
And you see some of them where they've actually sculpted them like with parks and stuff like that, where they've clipped them into all these roundy, knobbly kind of fantastic shapes. But I think, gosh, they must have had them in the ground for a while. I was quite surprised how slow they were.
It depends on which variety that you're growing, because some are faster than others and some you might want to watch out for because they can be like the poison ivy, creeping and strangling plants.
Oh, okay. And then there's for the caprosmas, the big shiny leaf.
Yes.
Very, very big round shiny leaf. They look fantastic in the right setting.
Mm-hmm.
They're more than a ground cover. They're really like a low-growing shrub. But they have that extraordinary, with the light on them, is just makes them very pingy. But there's a Caprosma tycho, which is a very low-growing Caprosma propinqua. And it forms a really thick, rugged sort of mat. So if you've got big areas that you have to just get managed and free of weeds and everything else, then that's a good one to go over the top of everything.
I've got here Caprosma repens, and I think repens means in Latin creeping.
Oh, okay.
And I think it's got a smaller leaf, but yes, so the leaves are shiny, and they also call it mirror plant because the leaves are so shiny and they're like mirrors.
So how big is it? I'm talking about the Caprosma that's got the big, big round leaf.
Yeah.
So that must be that one that you're mentioning. Okay, that's interesting that they rank that as a ground cover because it can go up to 400 high or so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you just keep it clipped.
Yes, you do, if you get round to it. And, of course, you know, another beautiful native ground cover is the trailing fuchsia, the procumbens.
Yes.
What a lovely, lovely plant. Except... when you're placing it, to remember that it's deciduous.
Deciduous. So in winter you're not going to see much of the leaves.
But it kind of, when it comes out, it's kind of like a moment because it starts to tumble and trail everywhere and suddenly you've got this very dainty display. And those flowers are astounding.
I mean, the colours in them,
gold and purple.
And blue.
It's just... But they're very secret, you know, like so many New Zealand natives, the flowers are a bit secret, you know, you have to go looking for them and then when you see them, they're so exotic.
It makes a wonderful pot plant to just trailing, like a hanging plant. hanging basket.
Yeah. I've got it on a kind of retained wall where it spills over the side of the wall, and sort of this time of year it's all disappearing. But come spring, suddenly that wall is all trailing with it, which is, yeah, it's one of its little blessings.
Talking about trailing plants, and now you garden on a slope, Terry, do you have rosemary, prostrate rosemary?
I have had it. But it doesn't, it's not as vigorous as the upright, so I've actually changed to the upright one. It probably would be if it was rougher, sort of stonier ground. Mm-hmm. And the light changes so much in a shaded site with lots of plants that it will get away and it'll be very happy, and then it has to sit in the shade for a few months because of a change of light. And it starts to get a bit miserable. I mean, they're the hardest things in the world to kill, in truth, but I don't want it to look scrawny either.
Yeah.
So I've ended up with the upright one.
Okay.
Yeah.
It likes a bit of a dry, sunny spot.
More definitely.
Of a Mediterranean coastal area.
Yeah, for sure. And then there's all the thymes.
All the thymes. The plant, the thymes.
Yeah.
The creeping thymes, very good. Although in my experimental ground cover garden, they didn't seem to like where I put them.
Well, thyme is a very hot and deprived bank sort of
thing.
Maybe
it was a bit too moist.
Yeah, they don't care for, they're not that fussy about moisture, but they'll go off if they're given, hot or... Maybe even a warm soil temperature.
Maybe it was too cold for them.
And I've got a list here that I dug out, which has got quite a lot of Australian favourites, which includes the grevilleas.
Yes, I've seen banks of them, and they make a wonderful display with their different colour leaves
and stuff. Yeah.
And the flowers, but the leaves can be quite amazing in themselves.
Yeah. They're an interesting plant and, a good bird plant too, I think, the grevillea, or the flowers anyway. And dichondra, which is another one, I think is that your baby tears? Is that the dichondra?
Very similar, but no, it's a different plant.
No, it's a different plant. Okay, and dichondra, they even have if you decide to do a dichondra lawn, you can get a... if you're inclined to do this at all, rather than have to weed it, there is a poison that you can put on for the other weeds that doesn't kill the dichondra.
Oh, so it's quite resistant to...
Well, I don't know what it... Like you were talking about pouring the salt on before.
Oh, okay.
So it's unaffected by this mix that they have for weeding. But again, inclined, unless you've got exactly the right spot, to little ball patches. But if you've prepped the ground and done some sort of loose base coursey type stuff and then some sort of sandy soil mix, and as you do have to do if you're going to do an ordinary grass lawn as well, if you prep the ground right, then you shouldn't have those problems.
Haven't tried that dichondra. I've tried the silver one in a pot. I wanted it to trail down and, be pretty, but it kind of didn't really like where I put it. Maybe I put it in too much sun and it kind of shriveled up.
It's interesting. It says here, great for use as a substitute lawn in shady locations.
Oh, wow.
That's shady, but... these combinations sometimes that you think, well, it can't be possible. If it's shady and it's clay and everything else, then it's not going to be free draining. I am so over walking through particularly the perennial parts of the garden centre going, oh, that's nice. Oh, free draining full sun. Free draining full sun. And I think, well, anything will be happy in free draining full sun.
Of course.
They're not going to commit themselves to things that might be a bit tricky.
Terry, have you tried Creeping Jenny?
I don't know Creeping Jenny. Not by that name, anyway. What else is it?
Oh, I forgot the name of the Latin. It's a yellowy ground cover and it creeps along. And you can... It roots where it creeps along. But it's not like ivy. It's not invasive in that way. It's just got a beautiful golden colour.
Oh, well, gold is... it's not a thyme like some of the yellow thymes.
Maybe it's called Lizzie Macchia. I think maybe that's the name.
Okay.
I should know.
just looking at this is all the whole list of some of the times. Some of the other ones that I've found here, Pimelea prostrata. I have seen that in place. It's dainty, pretty sort of a thing. These are the natives now. I think the list of natives is a little bit indicative. Caprosma neglecta. I think that name says you can do what you like with this one and it'll cope. Wallenbergia gracilis, native bluebells.
Oh, what about the native Daphne? Is that the
I don't know that one.
Yeah, I think there's some prostrate form of that that's sort of very low and got a beautiful blue leaf. But
blue leaf?
Bluey green leaf.
Yeah, yeah.
Although I think it likes a bit of the drier, rocky spots. Well, I haven't tried it in my garden, but it looks spectacular in other people's gardens.
Oh, okay. I've just spotted one here that sounds like it could be tough enough and adaptable enough for my place. Musus radicans, the swamp musk. It's a herb that forms thick patches and grows white flowers, and it likes the damp in the sun or shade.
Woo-hoo! Ooh,
we might need that one.
Musus
radicans.
Radicans.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe not in your area because it's a bit shady, but in the sunny spots, oregano.
Oh,
or
yeah.
Majorum. I always get them mixed up, but they form very good mats and good ground covers. If you want to cover some ground.
I do have oregano and it flowers.
Yes.
And the bees come from everywhere. So if those bees were, you know, in a hive, you'd get some very interesting flavoured honey because the bees love the flowers on oregano.
Mm.
I have it as a sort of the ground cover part of a pot that's growing a lime, and I also have it on a bank, and in both cases it flowers beautifully and the bees come from everywhere. So if you even want to have bees attracted to other plants around it, it's very good for that, for the period that it's flowering, of course. But and then again, it's very delicious in your
herbal
your cooking
tea.
Well, just in cooking, you know, lots of places in the sort of Italian side of cooking, the one that I've got, I actually, you know, when you go to the greengrocers and they have plants, herbs that are planted. I use that one because it was very peppery and very spicy. It seems to be the right one for our conditions as well.
Talking about ground covers that are good down slopes and attract the bees, what about nasturtium?
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, they grow spontaneously everywhere and they're fantastic, aren't they?
Yeah.
And, you know, totally edible and so pretty, so pretty.
Yes, the thing is that they're annuals, though, so they'll die down in the frost.
Yeah, they seem, well, I don't have frost, but they do seem, I mean, they throw their little seeds all over the place, don't they?
So once you've got it, you've probably got it forever.
Mm.
But they, I've seen that on banks and you just don't mow because you don't have to, but they will cover a lot of ground and beautiful orange and red and yellow flowers.
Mm. And completely throw them in a salad and they bring it all to life. It's so, they're so
Some
nice.
People call it a weed, but I don't think so.
Oh, no. They're lovely.
And another one that does well in the sunny spots, a gazania.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the gazanias. They're great. Again, can be a bit fussy about how sort of loose the soil is, but the harder, meaner soils actually do really well.
Yeah. I think they like the sandy areas and very good because they grow quite tight. The weeds don't have a chance. If you weed out everything before and you just monitor it, but once you've got all the weeds out and they grow, they'll just cover the ground.
Yeah.
And, no weeds.
Very, very handsome plant, yeah.
Gardeners, we've completely smothered you with suggestions of ground cover plants that we've run out of time. And, we still want to talk more, but we're going to be back next week with different topics. So please tune in next week at Garden Planet or email us gardenplanetfm@gmail.com. Thank you, Terry, for sharing all those ground cover plants.
Oh, thank you for lots of hot tips in there. And we'll catch up with some of your garden visiting that you've been doing.
Happy gardening, everyone.
Bye.